Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio, an RB Media audio brand, presents Megalodon in Paradise by Hunter Shea. Narrated by Phil Curran and performed by a full cast. Megalodon in Paradise. RB Media is the largest audiobook publisher in the world. Find your next great listen and get exclusive offers at graphicaudio.net and rbmediaglobal.com. 1954. The whole thing had gone foobar faster than two eagles fucking in mid-flight. Chet Hardy knew it the moment they deployed him here, but he'd kept his opinions to himself. Doing otherwise would have landed him in deep shit. Ah! A crashing wave nearly tipped the life raft over. Chet's ass left the bench for a terrifying moment, his short life flashing before his eyes, lungs stinging from the salty spray. Somehow, both he and the boat landed in one sodden piece. He couldn't hear the thunder over the angry belching of the ocean. Chet went back to coaxing the outboard motor to life, but no matter how hard he pulled, it stayed silent and dead, just like everyone else. A wave splashed down 10 feet behind him, pushing the boat toward what remained of the destroyed shore.
Ah!
He kicked the engine.
Even if you get this bitch running, then what? If this storm doesn't kill you, that thing will.
Now, he was the last man standing, and there was no hope of getting back home to Portland, Maine. A powerful gust of wind slammed the boat, skittering it over the churning water, flying against the current. Jesus H. Christ, that had to be almost 80 miles an hour. It air-dried his face and threatened to flay the flesh from his skull. Now he was further from the demolished beach, back to the drop point for those man-killer waves. He wasn't even sure how he ended up in the life raft. He remembered watching everything unravel. The warning klaxons, people running to man their positions. The shouting, followed by screaming. The roar of gunfire, the cracking of the ship's hull. More screaming. Water gurgling as it consumed the ship. People begging for help, others wailing in their death throes. Someone barking orders, and worst of all, the sickening crunch of bones as they were masticated to powder. Something had exploded behind him, and there was fire. The orange glow gave light to the horror around him. It charged and retreated, taking bloody souvenirs each time. Chet had a bead on it once, but his hands shook so much, he dropped his gun in the water. Not that it would have made a difference. Shooting the abomination was like taking a pellet gun to the side of the Empire State Building. Chet Hardy looked back, and his heart froze. The onrushing wave dwarfed all the ones previous. He was good and fucked. If life were fair, he'd have a cigarette handy. Even traitors were allowed one last puff before getting put down by the firing squad. The roar of the wave was deep enough to dislocate his bones.
Please, no, please don't let it hurt.
A continuous barrage of lightning strikes illuminated the dark wall of water. Chet looked into the eyes of his death and shit himself. The wave wasn't alone. It was swimming within the deadly tide, mouth wide open, headed straight for him. Chet feebly raised his arms, as if they had the power to stop the cold certainty of his demise.
No. No, dear God, no!
Like old Jonah, Chet and the life raft were swallowed whole, descending into the blackest, foulest chasm this side of hell. Present day, Ollie Arias was a small man and only seemed to shrink with age. Born 2 weeks late, he came into this world a wailing, dripping, pink tangle of stunted limbs. Being short of stature wasn't much of an issue until middle school, when all the other kids seemed to sprout overnight. That's when the taunting began. He can endure shrimp and short stuff and even midget, but for some reason, when they called him alligator arms, he'd fly into a rage. By college, he was a veteran barroom scrapper. Topping out at 5 feet, he was often the subject of cruelty. He was always happy to show them the error of their ways. It got to the point where even his tight-knit crew of college friends didn't want to be around him. Ollie didn't blame them, but he sure as hell missed them. His senior year, which should have been fun and full of the promise of better things to come, was instead lonely and melancholic. So Ollie stopped going out and sank deep within himself, where it was safer. Like a chameleon, he could disappear in any setting. Invisibility was easier. It kept him from getting hurt and making big mistakes. It was his ability to fly under the radar that kept him in his job 5 miles from where he was born, and 10 from his alma mater. Few others than his supervisor were even aware of his existence. He'd once changed his nameplate on his outward-facing cubicle wall to read COG. No one seemed to notice, so he left it that way. It had been there for over 3 years. A homebody, Ollie had two passions, movies and playing the lottery. When it came to movies, he loved everything. After work each night, he'd go home, make dinner, and watch 2 or 3 movies before drifting off to sleep. As for the lottery, he played up to $50 a day, rattling off numbers at a feverish pace. He'd break even on good years, come up a little short on most. The thrill he got every time he checked his numbers, spine stiffening, gut clenching, heart racing, was the high point of his day. That night, the pot was the third largest in history, a staggering $890 million. When he saw that all 6 of his numbers matched the night's drawing, he dropped the phone and ticket. Ollie passed out. When he came to, he checked the numbers again, just to make sure it wasn't all just a dream. It wasn't. The next morning, he called a lawyer opting to get the single payout. It was estimated he'd be the recipient of over $400 million. There was one thing Ollie wanted to get in order first. It was just like any Tuesday at work. The office was quiet, people sipping coffee and checking email. He ripped the COG nameplate from his wall. He opened his supervisor's door without knocking. He tossed his nameplate on Bill's desk.
I emailed a bunch of short audio files I collected of you over the years. You have a big fucking mouth. I don't think there's a single person you haven't torn down when their backs were turned. For once, being short and inconsequential came in handy.
Ollie's heart swelled when he saw the man's jaw muscles tense to the point of popping. Bill's face was so red, Ollie thought he looked like a baboon's ass.
Enjoy your office. Why, you still have it.
The moment he closed the door, he heard something thrown across the room. Sauntering down the row of cubicles, he couldn't help but notice the escalating chatter as people opened their email and listened to the audio files. Standing by the elevator, he inspected his knuckles.
Well, look at that. You just kicked some serious ass and didn't even get a bruise.
Funny how many doors money tended to open. He'd sent the invitations to his college friends 2 weeks ago, complete with round-trip airfare, car service, and hotel accommodations. They'd all RSVP'd, but deep down, he never thought all of them would show. It's not like an all-expenses-paid jaunt to Minnesota in February was the opportunity of a lifetime. But they were all here, drinking cocktails and talking as if 8 years hadn't passed since they parted ways after graduation. He'd made a silent entrance, so no one noticed he was there. He watched his old friends. Lenny Burke had his elbows on a bar top table, checking his phone while laughing at something Tara McShane said. They'd called Lenny Stump back in the good old dorm days on account of an enamored one-night stand announcing to everyone at a party that he was hung like a tree stump. They laughed their asses off, not quite sure if it was meant to be a good thing or an insult. Tara McShane, or T-Mac, had lost her freshman 15 and then some. She looked like the after picture in one of those fad exercise commercials. Stephen Cooter Combs knocked back a beer and was quick to order another. A country boy from Alabama, he'd always been the life of the party. By Stephen's side was a pretty blonde with perfectly tan skin. Her name was Heidi, and she and Stephen had been married for a few years. She was the one Ollie was worried about. Last but not least was Marco Conti. The guy was a born wheeler dealer and hailed from Newark, New Jersey. He'd gotten them all fake IDs and had blackmailed a teacher into giving Ollie an A in his philosophy class, but it looked like he'd flunk out at the end of freshman year. Ollie enjoyed watching them from here, just as he'd been happy to simply be in their orbit in college. He'd filled his days and nights observing this odd collection of strangers who somehow grew to be a family. Being cast aside from that family had hurt deeply. But he knew, after a year of therapy where he did a lot of couch punching and teeth gnashing, that he was the only one to blame. He'd never encountered people he felt so close to before or since, which was why he had asked them all to come here tonight. Asked, but never in his wildest dreams expected to see this happy reunion. He leaned on the rail.
Excuse me, this is a private party. I expressly told the bouncer no riffraff.
Five smiling faces beamed up at him.
Is it possible your hair has gotten even redder? You shifty ginger.
They stood around a table, drinking and laughing, falling back into the old routine of ragging on one another, all in good fun.
Hey! Yay, Ollie!
His old friends gave him a round of applause as he entered the room. He took a bow and was pulled into their circle by Stephen, his big arm looping around Ollie's neck.
So, T-Mac, what have you been up to?
Ollie had a crush on Tara when they were freshmen. She was dating Lenny at the time, then Stephen, then Marco. Ollie was the one guy in their group who never had a chance with her.
Wow, I haven't been called T-Mac in ages.
You'll always be T-Mac to me.
Ollie clinked his glass against her own. Slow your roll, Ollie thought to himself. Yeah, Tara is hotter than ever, but don't leave yourself open for disappointment. Maybe things will turn out different with Tara when she hears what I have to say. He remembered it was Tara who had bestowed the nickname Raging Bull on him after a particularly nasty bar fight. At the time, he thought it was a damn cool nickname. And it was, until things fell apart. Now, here was his chance to put things back together again, despite the odds. Ollie felt the weight of the unspoken, the questions they all had, pressing down on him.
So, I guess you're wondering why I brought you all here.
Yeah, obviously to brag about how you made a big time in the world.
Yeah, I gotta say, your invite had me curious. Oh, and thank you for the extra ticket for Heidi.
I wanted to meet her. Besides, I couldn't do this properly if she wasn't here.
Please, don't let it be something depressing.
Okay, Raging Bull, spill it.
Looking into her eyes, Ollie almost forgot everything he'd rehearsed in front of his mirror for weeks. He hadn't counted on the overwhelming rush of nostalgia and emotions he'd thought were long lost.
Hey, what'd you do, win the lottery?
Ollie's mouth refused to obey his commands. When he was able to catch his breath.
As a matter of fact, I did.
Wait, what?
I won the lottery.
Holy shit! That's fantastic!
Not just any lottery. You remember the Powerball drawing for just under $1 billion?
Oh, the one that was won by one anonymous person?
Yep.
What? You're the guy.
I'm the guy.
You're joking, right?
If I am, this night is gonna bankrupt me.
Wow, congratulations.
Unbelievable. Boy, that is just awesome, bro. Holy cow. How did you manage to hold it in all this time?
Oh, I won months ago. It's easy to keep a low profile. Trust me, the less people that know, the better.
I'm so happy for you. You were always a good guy, even when you were being an asshole and breaking a bottle over someone's head. And thank you for bringing us all together to share the good news. This is really special.
You haven't even heard why I asked you all to come.
Oh, wait, you mean it wasn't just a party with your favorite drinking partners?
Oh, it's partly that. Look, I have a proposal, and I want you to just sit back quietly and take it in. Okay?
Everyone took their drink and then took a seat at the table. Ollie stood before them like a kindergarten teacher about to start story time.
Look, ever since college, my life has been, well, let's just say unspectacular. I work, I eat, I watch movies, I shit, I sleep, and repeat. For my last birthday, I watched 16 Candles alone and fell asleep with a pint of Cherry Garcia on my chest. And that was the best day I'd had all that month.
The look of sympathy in their eyes, especially Tara and Heidi's, made him swallow hard.
Just take that as an example of how exciting things have been. Now I have all this money, and I didn't know what the hell to do with it. And even though I was kept anonymous, I was still besieged by goddamn vultures, all wanting a piece of the pie. After a while, I had to sever ties with just about everyone I knew. How all these people found out, I'll never know.
You have the money now to pay someone to find out.
True, but I really don't care. I've been living in a cabin I rented up at Lake Vermilion, trying to figure out what I want to do with the rest of my life. Of course, there are charities I want to help out, but I had to decide where I wanted to live and what I was going to do with all this time I now had on my hands. I sure as shit don't want to keep freezing my gonads up here.
That's why I moved to South Carolina. I don't own a winter coat or a snow shovel.
Anyway, when I really thought about it, I realized the best times of my life were all when I was around you guys. And if I was going to be able to enjoy the rest of my life, it was probably best to spend it with you.
You may not crash in our guest room.
I'll see your guest room and raise you. No, I have a much better idea. I'd like you all to live with me.
There was a long pause.
In a cabin at Lake Vermilion?
Ollie grinned.
It only has one bedroom. So I was thinking, how about an island?
An island? What island?
Ollie's heart was beating so fast, he was sure they could hear it thump away every time he opened his mouth.
It's a private island in Micronesia.
Micronesia? Where the hell is that? Is it near Tunisia or something?
Your grasp of geography is stunning. Are you sure we graduated from the same college? It's north of Australia, east of the Philippines.
That is correct, sir. It's 3 square miles of pure paradise. I don't just want you all to visit. I want you to live there with me permanently.
Hold on, permanently? As in we can never leave?
It's not a prison. You can come and go as you please. In fact, you can do anything you like. I'll make sure you not only get to live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, but that you'll also never need to work a day in your life.
No one spoke for what felt like ages. Drinks were left untouched. It was as if all of the air had escaped the room. In nightclubs, no one can hear you scream, Ollie said to himself. He felt sweat break out in his temples and upper lip. Lenny, bless his heart, was the first to break the silence.
Well, where the hell do I sign?
Ollie was peppered with questions.
What's the name of the island?
Grand Isla Tiburon.
Sounds pretty.
It's gorgeous.
Is there anyone living there now?
Nope. It's been deserted for decades.
So, are we just gonna beach bum it?
Far from it. I'm gonna have homes built for everyone who comes, along with a lot of cool amenities. Think of it as a gated community with everything you need at your fingertips.
What about food and basic necessities? And internet and phones? And porn? Don't judge me.
All taken into account. Satellite phones will also be provided so you can stay in touch with your family and friends. As for general supplies, we'll have monthly deliveries, but can get anything we need at a moment's notice. We won't be in the middle of nowhere like Easter Island. There are hundreds of nearby islands, including the capital, Majuro. You won't lose any of the technology you now have, though you may want to ditch it at some time. I'll make sure there's Wi-Fi so your porn is portable.
How long until it's ready?
I've been assured we can move in by the fall.
This sounds like an enormous undertaking. I'm talking billionaire territory. I know you want a huge jackpot, but how is it going to cover all of this?
The cost of doing business is a lot cheaper in Micronesia than the good old U.S. Plus, I was able to get the island for, well, a little more than a song, but you get the drift.
What's the deal with the island? Does it get wiped out by typhoons every 2 years?
Maybe it's haunted?
No and no. It was a former military holding. They abandoned it a few years after the war.
The war? Which war?
Ollie felt his confidence stagger.
The big one.
Vietnam?
You don't mean the Gulf Wars.
World War II. Jeez.
Heidi's eyes went as wide as ostrich eggs.
World War II? It's been abandoned since the 40s?
1954, to be exact.
Probably littered with unexploded ordnance. If you send people out to build, they could be stepping on a literal minefield.
Or the ground or water could be toxic. Militaries don't give a crap about the environment.
Marco held up a finger.
I'm assuming the Australians were the ones that owned it.
As a matter of fact, it was an American base of operations. It's part of the Marshall Islands, which is why they were willing to work with a fellow American to take it off their hands.
Tara's mouth dropped open.
Wait, the Marshall Islands? As in the Pacific Proving Grounds?
What the hell is that?
Marco took a quick nibble at his thumb.
That's where they did a bunch of nuclear testing. You ever hear of the Bikini Atoll? They, like, blew the shit out of the place.
Stephen leaned into the table.
Bikini Island's still there, but there was another island I forgot to name. That was completely obliterated when they set off the first thermonuclear bomb. Just boom, gone, like it never even existed.
The military had to evacuate whole populations to other islands hundreds of miles away. Not just until things blew over, forever.
We set off all these bombs without warning the civilians. It was a total travesty.
Ollie's heart galloped. He knew he'd eventually have to address this. He just didn't think it would happen this soon. Lenny looked at everyone with hawk's eyes.
How does everyone know so much about this stuff?
The History Channel.
Well, at least until they went all Ancient Aliens, hillbillies, and pawn shop cheats.
Ollie had to act fast.
Everything you said is true. The Marshall Islands are the site of one of the biggest crimes against the race of people since the American Indians. There are, in fact, islands that are uninhabited because of nuclear contamination. Grand Isle Tiburon, I assure you, is not one of those locations. In fact, it was nowhere near the nuclear testing. They had to keep it free and clear of all that craziness.
Why's that?
They had a lab or something there. You have to remember, this was back during the Cold War, and there were spies everywhere. They had to find places as remote as possible to do top-secret work.
Marco raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, well, we know that only good things come from under the cloak of secrecy. You get nuclear bombs from Los Alamos, all kinds of diseases from Plum Island, and not to mention those Montauk monsters that washed up on the beach.
I think if anything that evil came out of this place, we'd have heard of it 70 years later. And the Montauk monster was a rotted raccoon. Nothing evil about a drowned raccoon. Sounds like the coast is clear. Right, Ollie?
Absolutely. The military put it in writing that there is nothing left behind harmful to humans or the environment. Even the EPA gave it a total clean bill of health. It's empty because, to be fair, the Marshallese are poor people. They don't have the resources to repatriate the island and build it back up. And once the military was done with it, there was no one left to give two shits about the place.
Heidi looked at him with thinly veiled disgust.
So you want to take advantage of other people's misery?
Ollie had to ball his hands into tight fists under the table.
Not at all. In fact, part of my plan is to donate millions of dollars to the neighboring islands to improve their health, schools, and infrastructure. I'm going to employ them to help rebuild the island. And when I die, it's being willed to the Marshallese people. I'm not a monster. We did wrong down there. Here's my chance to really do something good in the world. And with my friends to boot.
That's actually kind of sweet.
Tara placed her hand over her heart.
Amazing that it came from you.
Stephen cast a quick look at Heidi, whose gaze wiped the smile from his face. She definitely needed more convincing, just as Ollie had suspected.
So there's nothing on the island?
There's one building, the old main lab. It's supposed to be totally empty. I'll have it torn down.
Don't do it right away. I'd like to check it out.
You still into that whole abandoned buildings thing?
It's called urban exploring, and it's a rush like you've never experienced. I'll take you all in there. Show you how it's done.
Sounds creepy and dangerous. Count me out.
Ollie felt their attention waning.
Look, I'm not saying that you have to stay there forever. I'm just asking you to come share this amazing adventure with me. I plan to make trips to the other islands and work with the kids there, local hospitals, you name it. I promise it will be the most amazing experience of your life. You can leave anytime you want. If you do, I'll still make sure you and your kids never need to work a day in your lives.
Marco stared at him for an uncomfortably long time. Ollie could hear the little calculator keys tapping away in his head.
Hey, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I've got nothing to lose, so you can count me in. And my concern is that you're not being taken for a ride, Ollie. You'd need independent surveyors going out there to make sure the island truly is safe.
Which is why I want to hire you on immediately as my right-hand man and financial advisor. I have people now, but I don't trust them like I do you.
You don't have to do that.
I know, but I really want you running the show.
In fact, Ollie had never been as close to another person as he had to Marco back in college. They were roommates from totally different worlds, but they made it work. Ollie loved to listen to Marco's exploits and big plans for future world dominance. He'd always been so brave, so smart, so sure of himself. It was clear a lot of that bravado had leached away over the years. Ollie hoped this would give Marco his groove back.
I have to say, this has been the craziest 12 hours of my life.
Look, there's no rush. I know, this was a lot to lay on you. Take your time and think about it. I only ask that you give me your answer by the end of the month, just so I know how much building has to be done.
That seems fair. I could tell you now, I'm in with Marco. I fucking hate market research, and I haven't had a date in over 6 months. My parents moved to Alabama to be near my dumbass brother. I'm free as a bird. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to take a whiskey crap.
Ugh.
Well, he hasn't changed.
Well, if that's true, I'm not going in there after him. I roomed with the guy for 3 years. I know the whore to come.
I almost forgot.
Ollie pulled his phone out and went to his pictures file.
This is Grand Isle of Tiburon. Tell me it isn't gorgeous.
He handed it to Tara. Stephen, Heidi, and Marco gathered around while she swiped through shot after shot of white sand beaches, palm trees, and crystal blue water. When Lenny returned 5 minutes later, they were still looking. They emerged from the club with hands shielding their eyes from the sun. They looked like vampires. Tara hugged him and kissed his cheek.
Look, I really need to think about it. It all sounds amazing and kind of scary. You understand, right?
He looked into her emerald eyes and wondered if he'd still want to go through with everything if she didn't come.
I do. I'll send you, all of you, every scrap of information I have and everything that Marco and I discover, so there's total transparency. I want us to be safe more than anything.
I know you do.
She'll go, he said to himself over and over. Above all else, she'd do it just knowing they would help the Marshallese people. She'd always done charity runs and volunteered at the girls' club and soup kitchens. It was part of the reason why he'd chosen Grand Isle of Tiburon. It would give her a chance to impact people's lives on a grand scale. She had to go. Ollie was out the moment his head hit the pillow. Oddly enough, he dreamed of mushroom clouds. 9 months later, Ollie wasn't sure if he could have accomplished everything without Marco. When it came to the worlds of business, real estate, and finance, Ollie was as experienced as a Bigfoot optometrist. Whatever areas Marco lacked, he was very skilled at finding the right people with the right expertise. They'd moved to Grand Isle of Tiburon 2 months ago. It was important to be there to watch over the final construction phases. The heat didn't diminish the beauty of the island. The shore was lined with soft white sand, clusters of palm trees, and the crystal blue waters of the Pacific. He'd thought it would be a flat island, but it had its share of peaks and valleys. When it came to the design of the bungalows, Ollie opted for simplicity rather than opulence. The whole idea of coming out here was to live in peace and harmony with nature. There was a lot of bamboo and teak with mosquito netting over the canopy beds. The last thing he wanted to do was flaunt his wealth in the faces of the Marshallese who would work on the island. It would become their island in time. No need to set a ridiculous standard they'd struggle to maintain. All of the homes were single-level raised structures because of the propensity for flooding, not just during the rainy season, but when any kind of storm swelled the surrounding Pacific. The five houses were arranged in a ring in the center of the island. Their placement was designed to mirror the natural ring of the ovular coral reefs that enclosed lagoons and were in abundance in Micronesia. There was enough distance between each to provide privacy, while still being close enough to wave to one another from their front doorsteps. All had two bedrooms with dining rooms that opened up to teak wood decks overlooking the ocean, since the ocean was just about everywhere you looked. Ollie envisioned countless dinner parties as they hopped from house to house, enjoying each other's company over bottles of wine, the moon shimmering on the darkening water.
The boat should be here in an hour.
Thanks for the heart attack.
Anytime.
I was so excited. I couldn't sleep last night.
Oh, I sweat right through my sheets. That ceiling fan only seemed to make it worse. I had to take a couple shots of whiskey to sleep so I wouldn't be dragging ass today.
The air conditioners arrive next week. We'll be sleeping like old cats once we get them in.
You mean babies?
Marco was drinking from a freshly cracked coconut. A handful of workers were putting the finishing touches on the exterior of Lenny's bungalow.
Babies sleep like shit. I had a cat, Drusilla, who would sleep through an earthquake. That's the kind of sleep I want.
I'll just be happy to stem the tide of diaper rash this place has given me.
He motioned for Ollie to follow him to his house.
Hey, come on, help me carry the cooler and stuff down to the dock.
There wasn't a cloud in the sky, and the sun seemed especially bright. Ollie wiped a sheen of sweat from his forehead.
I'm putting on my suit. I'm staying in the water until the last possible second.
Hey, good idea. Can we technically call ourselves beach bums?
Why the hell not? Who's around to tell us otherwise?
They changed and each carried a handle on the cooler filled with champagne and flutes. The ice shifted loudly. Ollie worried that the glasses would break, but they made it to the dock in one piece. As soon as he closed the cooler lid, he jumped into the crystal blue water. Opening his eyes, it seemed like he could see forever. Marco splashed next to him, diving under the dock to collect shell fragments. At best, Ollie was a middling dog paddler, but he could hold his breath a bit and float under the water without panicking. Visibility under the pristine water was clear as glass. Ollie kept meaning to study up on the various sea life that would be his neighbors, but getting everything ready was so time-consuming. There would be time, plenty of time. A large shadow trailed the wake of a school of fish. He couldn't make out what it was. He did know there were a lot of big-ass tuna out here. It could also be a shark. The entire area had been declared a shark sanctuary decades ago. He'd been reassured that they weren't of the man-eating Jaws variety, for the most part. He and Marco had spent many a dusk sitting on the beach with cold beers, watching dozens of triangular shark fins swimming back and forth in the distance. Ollie spotted the hull of the boat as it cleaved its way toward the island. He popped up and saw Marco climbing up the ladder on the side of the dock.
Here they come.